Hey everyone, welcome to another episode of Bitcoin Banter. Rick and Tony are with me, and today is all about the people who are coming after us, and for once, it's not the government. So let's jump into the news. Alrighty, so Eric Stevens on Twitter shared, Coinbase has restricted my account without any explanation. He goes on to say that he's a paying customer with $2 million in inaccessible assets. He would like an immediate explanation. Now, on one hand, this is new news in that he just shared this recently. On the other hand, this seems to be a recurring theme with Coinbase, certainly, and perhaps with others. Tony, why don't you give your pitch for why not use Coinbase?
This is reminiscent of that horror story I lived through 5 years ago in Lebanon. This is exactly what happened. It doesn't really matter how much money you have, you know, with them. In fact, the more money you have, the more restrictive they're going to be with your money because they don't want you to take it out. This is not Coinbase's first, rodeo act when it comes to restricting withdrawals. They've done it. Like I've lost count of how many times they've done it. But it also always seems to fall in line with either when the Bitcoin price is pumping or when they are expecting it to pump. So if you want like a bullish sign of things to come, well, you know, this is definitely one of them, to the detriment of those that have to, you know, suffer the consequences of these actions. Again, you know, these places are not safe. They're not convenient. They're not institutions that you can rely on in any way, shape, or form for any amount of money. These places should be used for the purpose that they're designed for. You buy your stuff and you withdraw it instantly. If you think you're going to leave it there because you just think they have a nice name or they're good people or they have a nice reputation behind them, you are going to be very, very sorely surprised at some point. And I hope this guy's story ends on a positive note, but as things get progressively worse, these things are going to continue to escalate up to a point where there will be no recourse and people will lose their funds. I just don't see any way around this. In fact, I've said this before, I expect there to be some sort of fabricated cyber attack or some, you know, bullshit reason of that caliber coming out in the very near future that is going to be used as an excuse as to why no one can access their funds, regardless of where they are, whether they're at the bank, at a Coinbase, or something similar, you will be locked out of your funds.
Yeah, it's unfortunate. Coinbase has really won the market on user interface, but our friends at River and Bitcoin Well, I mean, they have sort of different models, but River's full reserve, and they offer the proof that they have the reserves. And Bitcoin Well just says, we don't want to keep your Bitcoin. You have to take it into self-custody. This makes me wonder, does Coinbase even have what they... I would suspect they're more diligent when it comes to institutional investors because, Brian Armstrong would end up in prison for a long time if MicroStrategy or the ETFs, I think, got rugged. But I think with retail investors, I think they tend to be more flippant, and we've seen that time and time again. I could be being optimistic about the institutional side too. But Rick, what do you think?
Well, it's crazy, isn't it? I mean, it's quite funny. Like, it's Friday the 13th, right? And our whole show today, like, I don't know what's going on today, but like everything on my Twitter feed is like, this guy got hacked and this exchange has frozen my account. Like, it's all kind of crazy how quickly that's happening. But like you say, you know, this isn't anything new for Coinbase. If you do go and look up that tweet and go through all the comments on the tweet, there's loads of other people sharing screenshots of being locked out of their account, not being able to withdraw their Bitcoin. And the messages, they share screenshots of the messages from support, which are particularly unhelpful, right? They'll just say, sorry, you know, we've locked your funds for reasons that we've decided. But due to our privacy, like, we're not going to tell you what the reason is. So I think the problem with these exchanges is you quickly get into a situation where Look, it's not your Bitcoin if you haven't got the keys. Like they're holding it. And if they suddenly decide for God knows what reason, it could be, maybe they think you look a bit dodgy or you've done something dodgy. The reasons they give a myriad, right? Like, I don't know, maybe you got some Bitcoin from a friend and they can't trace that Bitcoin back to a centralized exchange that they recognize, and so they don't know what it is, and that's enough for them to lock up your whole account. And then if you can't prove everything and send them heaps of documentation, you just get stonewalled. And I mean, this guy, what did he say? Had like 2 million or something in funds. It really doesn't matter. Like Tony says, it doesn't matter how much you've got. Like these people are really not interested in what you've got to say. And do you know what? This happens so often. Funnily enough, I was speaking to a guy that I've known for years in Bitcoin. He still had some funds left on Bitstamp, and he's not been locked out of his funds, but Bitstamp said, well, listen, we just, for your safety, we want to just check that everything's okay. So we've locked the withdrawals on your account for the time being, right? But to unlock it, you're going to have to join a video call with us, right? So my friend, he goes to schedule his call with them. It's for like 4 days' time because there's no available bookings in the calendar to speak to them. So 4 days later, he ends up on the call, but no one from Bitstamp showed up to the call, right? And then so he sent a complaint message to them saying, well, you never even showed up. And they emailed him back saying, no, you didn't show up. And he's like now sending screenshots of him on the call, like, no, I was waiting for you guys. What are you doing? They've said book another call, but now there's, a full calendar. They can't get hold of them for days. And it's like, this is crazy now, right? Think about it. That's worse than a bank. That's worse than a bank. He wants to move his Bitcoin, right, out of an exchange, and it's going to take him like 2 weeks to do it. And there's no guarantee that he will be able to do it. So, you hear it from Coinbase, Kraken, like every exchange. I've heard a story like this about every single exchange that I'm aware of. So yeah, and like Tony says, I think at some point, this won't just be an anecdotal thing where a handful of people are saying, I can't get my Bitcoin out. At a certain point, it's going to be everyone, right? Because we've seen it before. We've seen it with FTX, Mt. Gox. And I'm pretty sure, like, let's just hope that the cell that they put SBF and P. Diddy in has still got a bit of room in there so that Brian's got somewhere to sit as well, right? Or maybe he'll just sit on P. Diddy's lap. I don't know. But but yeah, I mean, listen, is there a clearer message that you can't leave money on the exchanges? The clue is in the name. It's an exchange. Obviously, the best way for you to get Bitcoin is no KYC, right? Or buying peer to peer. But if you do have to use an exchange, use it as an exchange, not as a bank. Don't leave your funds there and get it out as quickly as possible.
Yeah, no point in a decentralized freedom money if you're just going to store it on a centralized exchange that is subject to regulatory capture or the whims of their privacy policy that is ever changing. So, all righty, but it's not just Coinbase. So we've got Kraken. They stole everything from this user. He's got a dot ETH handle, so but anyway, he's been in crypto since 2017, and he's showing some messages, I guess. Yeah, I mean, but this just really hits home the point. Like, I think it would be tempting for people to say, okay, I'm going to find a good exchange to keep it on. And the answer is, like, to Rick's point, like, no, it's not that exchanges are inherently bad. They're just providing a service. But if you try using them for a service at which they do not excel, like custodianship, you're going to pay the price eventually. So I mean, that's why we work with people like River and Bitcoin Well, because they don't want to keep your Bitcoin. They want you to take custody. So any further reaction to this one, Tony?
Yeah, man. I mean, Kraken, Coinbase, it's different side to the same nightmare. They're all going to do this. When the problem with this, by the way, when people start posting these experiences, what it does is that it triggers a panic, some sort of panic and fear, in the space. And then everybody else who's on Coinbase or Kraken, we're like, holy shit, let me see if my funds are okay. And then they go ahead and withdraw their funds, and then they get blocked as well, which escalates that panic. And then you've got like a whole domino, like the floodgates, bust wide open. And now you've got, essentially a bank run on the exchange. And what do you think happens then? then it's total lockdown because no one's going to go anywhere with a single penny on any one of them. You have to be very careful. These are the risks that you take when you leave your money with a third-party custodian. It doesn't matter who it is. You know, there's no such thing. They have a good reputation. Sure, some places are much better managed. They give proof of reserves, you know, and all that good stuff, which is great. I mean, they're always preferable over those that don't do this. But at the end of the day, the golden rule is the same. If you don't own your money, you don't own your money. There's just no way around that. Like, I mean, I don't know how many times it has to be said or how many people have to lose money or hear about others losing money before that message gets, you know, engraved, you know, inside your brain that we are no longer living in a time where we have to trust third party with our funds. We don't. This was the case up to 2008. As of 2008, the world was gifted with an option that, you know, now you don't have to do this anymore. So you need to unlearn the bullshit that you were fed that, no, this is exactly what you have to do. You have to trust government money and you have to put it in the bank because that's just the way it is. That is a complete fabrication, a complete lie that somehow they managed to fool us for a very long time. But now that's it. You know, the truth is out and it's up to every single individual to do their part to protect themselves. Because if you don't, you're going to end up on a headline just like these poor guys at some point. And at the end of the day, no one's really going to care because, you know, you essentially brought this onto yourself. No one's here coming to help you. It's up to each individual to help themselves. There's plenty of resources that will, you know, give you that assistance. But if you don't want it to begin with, then the only person to blame is the one, you know, looking back at you in that mirror.
Yeah. Rick, any further comment on this?
Yeah, I mean, there's not too much more to say. You know, it's the same thing, right? Don't leave your coins on an exchange. But what I will say about this particular case, this particular tweet, is to be fair to Kraken on this occasion, like I read through the full diatribe that this guy had with their support. And basically, why he's so upset is because he had some leverage trade on another platform, on some meme coin or shit coin, and he was about to get liquidated, right? And what he wanted to do was access his funds on Kraken to add more collateral to this trade so that he didn't get liquidated. Now, in my opinion, the fact that he's placed a stupid trade on a meme coin on another platform and is about to get liquidated and needs to add collateral, that's none of Kraken's business or problem, right? That's got nothing to do with them. However, if it is true that they don't give you access to your money when you need it, then you're not Bitcoining very well, are you? The whole point of Bitcoin is uncensorable money that you can move around, you know, almost instantly and no one can tell you what you can do with your money. But you can very quickly find out that if it's on an exchange and you do need immediate access to it, I mean, in this guy's case, it was to back some stupid trade that he's made. But, you know, for a normal person, maybe you've got a medical bill to pay or, you know, something actually important. And you might find yourself locked out of your money for weeks. I've heard some people years are still in debates with their exchanges about getting their money back. So, yeah, don't do it. Don't do it.
Well said. 100% self-custody only. And we continue with lost funds. I mean, and by the way, I mean, we, you know, we make jokes along the way, but that's in no way to, you know, diminish the pain that I think a lot of people are feeling. So this user had shared, wow, I had a data breach in my hardware wallet, got part of my Bitcoin drained, significant amount. And then he said, I'm moving the funds to a secure hardware wallet, and then we'll share the details. So, I mean, I guess here's the other thing. I think this is where people get stuck. I mean, they it may be turned off on the concept of Bitcoin. It's like, okay, I took it off the exchange and my hardware wallet got hacked or whatever. I would bet you all my Bitcoin stack that he wasn't using one of the hardware wallets we recommend and he wasn't set up properly. So I would just say that. Because you aren't going to lose your funds if you take proper self-custody, you know what you're doing, you're using the right hardware, open source only, Bitcoin only, air gapped. But what would you, Rick, why don't you take this one first? What would you say to someone like this? What would be your guidance for them?
I mean, this one's a particularly sad story, right? This guy I've probably followed him now for years. Like, I've never really spoken to him, but you know when you recognize someone's profile picture, you've seen them around a long time. And actually, I don't think this guy is like some new at all, right? That's just rocked up and had some sort of issue. I think he knows what he's doing to a certain extent in Bitcoin. Because if you read his message, what he says was he wasn't completely drained, and that actually he had multiple wallets attached to one device, right? And that suggests to me that he was probably using a hardware wallet and then passphrases, right, to secure each separate wallet. So I'm kind of intrigued and fascinated how this has happened, right? Like, how have they breached part of his wallet but not the rest of his wallet? And actually, I read some of his other tweets, and it sounds like he does have other hardware wallets, like one of the ones that we recommend, and that one wasn't breached. So, look, none of us have any details on this one yet, right? But something bad has happened here, and I really feel for the guy. I mean, look, everybody knows I was hacked. My mistakes were, I think, worse than his, right? Like, almost certainly my mistakes were worse. But it's sad to see. I mean, I'm interested. We should keep track of this story because he's on Noster, and he says like once he's now moved the rest of his funds and he feels secure, he will start sharing more details about transaction IDs and where the funds went, and maybe we'll learn something interesting, or maybe we'll learn which hardware wallet he was using, or maybe we'll find out like how someone's got his seed phrase and his passphrase for this. But yeah, my heart goes out to him because I think this guy's like a true blue Bitcoiner. I know how it feels to wake up one day and find out all your Bitcoin's gone. That's a savage. It's a savage experience. I'm just really happy that he didn't lose everything. But I think, look, the takeaway from this is I think this guy is not a total noob, right? The reason I think that is I've seen him around for a long time. I've read some of his tweets. And he's talking about he's going to share all the details on Noster and all this sort of stuff. He's also talking about passphrases. I think I've seen him talk about multisig before and all this sort of stuff. So he's not like a guy who's never interacted with Bitcoin enough. But the lesson here, I think, for a lot of people is these are new skills, right? Like, a lot of us have never worked in cybersecurity. We don't have loads of experience of keeping critical data safe. It's a kind of new concept for a lot of people. So I see a lot on Twitter people saying, oh, Bitcoin self-custody is really easy. And it kind of is and it kind of isn't, right? Like, I think anyone who can learn to drive a car can probably learn how to use hardware wallets and set themselves up appropriately. But when you learn to drive a car, you still get someone to teach you how to drive the car, right? Another example I'll give you, I like playing golf. Right, and I'm pretty good at golf, but if I want to get better, then I go and hire a coach to improve my swing and help me improve what I'm doing. So if people are investing significant amounts of money into Bitcoin, they need to take a percentage of what they're investing and put that directly towards security, whether that's buying better quality hardware, buying the hardware they need to set up a node, or preferably, finding people that can train them. Right? Like, you can call us and we'll sit down and we'll help you understand all of this stuff and get it right first time. But if you've, let's say you've got like, 50% of your net worth in Bitcoin, and all you've done is bought the cheapest hardware wallet you could find, and you think that spending 100 quid and 2 hours is enough of an investment to protect that much money. That's crazy. Like, people, I think people just not taking it seriously enough because we're so used to having that safety net of a bank or someone else that will save the day if something goes wrong. And we need to change that mindset to, I need to invest in this, whether that's time, money, just take it way more seriously. And yeah, fingers crossed this guy does okay, you know?
Yeah. So Tony, I think Rick provides some good commentary. Something we talk about a lot is, air gap, Bitcoin only, open source only. Why don't you just give like the minute, 2 minute pitch on like why that is so important? Because I think that's what gets lost here is the inferior, like people think that they've taken self-custody and perhaps they technically have, but they've made some of these mistakes. Why is what we talk about on that front so important?
Well, because to begin with, we have to understand what you're dealing with, what you're protecting. I mean, we are dealing with the world's scarcest asset, something we have never seen before. So the mindset that we take going into on all of our consults is that Bitcoin is already the world reserve currency. And whatever amount of Bitcoin that you currently hold right now, well, is going to become worth exponentially more than you can possibly imagine, because, you know, that's how scarce asset works. And so in order to protect it, though, in order for you to benefit from all this, you have to protect it. And so you can't take it lightly or keep looking for like a shortcut or a deal just to make things easier or more convenient for you. This is a new thing that we, you know, the world was introduced to. Okay. And like any new skill, you have to learn how to do it. There's no doing it sideways or doing it, you know, with a shortcut or skipping steps just for the sake of doing it. Like, what's your net worth to you? Like, if you're worth hypothetically, I don't know, $100,000, if you spend $10K investing on properly securing it, is that like a bad investment? In my opinion, absolutely not. Because if you don't do that and you spend $100 doing it, well, then the chances of you losing that entire 100,000 are much higher than you keeping the 90 by investing in a proper infrastructure in the first place, right? So this is like the mindset that one needs to take, you know, when approaching this. You are now the head of security. This is your bank. And so this bank needs to be your Fort Knox, so to speak, from now to the end of time. And because it's technology, it's always going to evolve. There's always going to be something new, something better you can do. And in the world of cybersecurity, it's never a light switch. It's always a process. So we take the approach of always improving. So I'm the type of individual, if I can improve like 0.01% of my setup every half an hour, I will do it. And I will also recommend others to do this as well, because if you don't keep up, you know, with the best of the best that's out there in order to protect your money, well, then you are inadvertently introducing this risk, you know, and potentially losing it or encountering an unfortunate event like this poor guy. I don't like reading these stories, man. They really, they upset me to no end, because it reminds me of what happened in my case 5 years ago. And no one has to go through something like this. It's extremely horrific. No one prepares you for it. So I hope he's okay. Another mistake that I see a lot of people doing is just taking advice from people that don't know any better than they do in the first place. Like, if you're not a cybersecurity expert or you've been in Bitcoin properly for a long period of time, and you go ahead and you ask your next door neighbor just because he happened to, you know, watch a TikTok that mentions a certain product, and you go and you believe that and you know dive, you know, heads and tails into that piece of advice, well, what kind of result do you expect? You know, like, they made movies out of this, you know, like situations like this, you know, Dumb and Dumber, right? So you don't want to be in a Dumb and Dumber situation. When you're protecting your money, you have to take it seriously, because if it's gone, it's gone, and nobody will care. That's the thing that nobody seems to understand. Like, they think there's some recourse. There's no recourse in Bitcoin. It wasn't designed for recourse. It was designed for personal responsibility. So again, you have to eliminate the old habits, the old mindsets. You cannot trust a third-party institution, no matter who it is, no matter how good-looking they are, no matter what great reputation you think they have. You cannot trust anyone other than yourself. And you have to master the skills so that you don't have to depend on somebody else. This is where we come in. We teach you all these skills. So at some point, you will be or should be 100% fully autonomous. So you can take this knowledge, you can pass it on to your loved one, your kids, and whoever else you choose to, and they will take that knowledge and hopefully carry that torch on forever. But you have to do the work. There's just no way around it. And the more people keep looking for these shortcuts into, you can't find a shortcut. That's the moral of the story. There are no shortcuts. Every shortcut equals a risk. So either do it right or just live with the consequences. And nobody needs an unhappy ending. It's always avoidable. Proper security protocol, a little bit of common sense and discipline, it's always a happy ending.
Yeah, you hit on something important. I mean, it's like low time preference behavior. You'll never regret an hour of your life that you spend working out or spending with family, or like, there are certain things, right? You'll never regret an hour of your life that you take time to learn more about self-custody, take it into self-custody, work with a team like ours to do the work. but it's just, it's like a mindset shift, right? I mean, everyone's got time to sit down and watch TV shows at night, but, you know, they're not spending the time on, I've done this thing. Now, how do I protect it? And unfortunately, I think a lot of people are going to pay the price. All right. Last item of news. If they are not taking your Bitcoin, they're taking your data. So Bitcoin ATM giant Byte Federal says they lost 58,000 users' personal data in a breach. And by the way, I appreciate what Byte Federal does. I had Michelle Weekly on the podcast a while back. Love her. She's great. But I mean, this is kind of the point is even good companies and people doing the right thing are susceptible to this. And it's important for people to be vigilant in protecting not only their Bitcoin, but also their data, their digital lives. Right. So, Tony, this is probably a good one for you to kick off. This is sort of your sweet spot and has been for a long time.
Well, this news is a lot more dangerous than what the headlines read, because, you know, when a Bitcoin honeypot gets hacked, it's very different from when somebody else gets hacked, because whoever's targeting these places is going after something very specific. They know the value of the asset behind it, right? So if your name is sitting on a database that belongs to someone who's clearly very intelligent and with one motive only, well, now you have potentially a big problem to deal with. They know who you are, where you live, how much you have, and where to find you very easily. You don't know how these companies are protecting this data, right? So this whole concept of KYC, why it's such rubbish, is because it's sold under the illusion that it's for your protection. There's nothing about this for anybody's protection. It's a pure control and surveillance mechanism that is completely useless when it comes to these things. And I think we're going to start seeing a lot more of these hacks, especially with Bitcoin honeypots, because they're going to become extremely valuable and extremely sought after. You know, like the people that don't have Bitcoin, you know, that have the skill set to go after it are going to do so. It's just nature of the beast. You know, people want what they don't have. And so companies that are, you know, protecting people's data, they have to be on top of this 24/7, 365 days a year. Like, you cannot be lazy about this, because someone from the outside, all they have to do is get lucky once. You need to be lucky every single time that they don't get in. So the odds are 100% against you. So this is why we're completely against this whole concept of KYC. We don't believe in it. It just doesn't work. And so when you're entrusting third-party institutions, especially with information pertaining to your Bitcoin, you are inadvertently painting a target on yourself should something go wrong. And I can assure you from my many years of experience, as good as anybody is, no one is perfect. And all it takes is for one oversight to cause an incident like this, and then there's no going back. It's too late. So to avoid it in the first place, you know, the Bitcoin white paper was written in one way, in one way only. There's no mention of third-party institution involvement in self-custody or the involvement of personal information disclosure in any of it, right? So if you're going to stick to the Bitcoin white paper and do things properly as intended, you should be, you'll be safe from all of these issues. But, you know, again, it takes for people to understand this and to, you know, unlearn again the old bad habits that have been ingrained in us since, you know, the day we were born. I know it's not easy, but, you know, the right decisions are often the most difficult to do, but they are the right decisions.
Yeah. Rick, any final comments?
Yeah, just like just how bad that hack is. I looked into the details a little bit, right? And the hackers got away with like names, addresses. So they know your name, they know your address, so they know where you live. Apparently, they also got access to transaction history as well. So if you've used this ATM multiple times, they can actually see where you sent the Bitcoin to. So now they have your Bitcoin address as well. And that probably means they've got a fairly good idea of how much Bitcoin you hold. And hackers operate just like businessmen do, right? They want to spend as little time as possible for the maximum output. So what they'll do is they'll put these people into tables and then they'll prioritize them. So if you're a guy with a lot of Bitcoin, you're going to be the first target on the list, right? I mean, it's shocking. Their social security numbers, they even had photographs. So I would imagine these ATMs wanted to take your picture. Yeah, well, now the hackers have a picture of your face, your home address, your social security number, and they know how much Bitcoin you've got. That is a disaster. In fact, it's not just a risk to your Bitcoin, that is a risk to your physical safety. Let's say you go on holiday somewhere and you're on these people's radar and they know, you're sharing holiday snaps on Instagram because you're out traveling around South America or something. This is crazy. You've become a big target. And look, I have some experience with this. I think that my KYC information and my dad's KYC information getting hacked during the Mt. Gox case. I mean, my self-custody security wasn't good enough, and that's on me. But I'm pretty confident that actually we weren't randomly targeted. I think people knew that we had a lot of Bitcoin. Our names are floating around still on the dark web. People go and buy these lists. They say, oh, these guys have got some Bitcoin. And then, like Tony said, they got lucky because they came across us and then they found that actually we had a weak setup and that's all she wrote. And like Tony says, I've really got to bolster what Tony's saying. Like, KYC has nothing to do with Bitcoin. It really doesn't. Like, well, can you KYC Satoshi? No, because it's not Craig Wright, is it? Right? So no one knows who Satoshi is. He didn't give up his passport or his ID or anything. And here, look, I'm really sorry. Like, people have got to say this, right? Like, here's my view, right? And it might be a strong view, and maybe it's because of my own experience of what happened to me. But hey, listen, if you're KYC your customers, you're a fiat company, not a Bitcoin company. That's my own personal view, but if you KYC your customers, you are putting them at risk. And look, I get it, right? You might say, well, I run an exchange and I can't run my business if I don't KYC my customers because they'll close my business down and all this sort of stuff. So fine, but let's just accept the fact that you are making that trade-off now. You're saying, well, I'm willing to put my customers at risk so that I can stay in business, right? So all I'm saying to people is just be aware that this is the situation out there. And there are alternatives to buy Bitcoin without KYC. And for entrepreneurs out there that want to build exchanges and that sort of thing, you can build privacy tools, right? Like there's loads of options out there. So I just hope people realize, how Tony a minute ago said, if you could put an hour in to just improve your security by a tiny fraction, well, why not put some hours into learning how to use the tools to buy non-KYC Bitcoin, right? It doesn't feel like a security thing because it's not a hardware device and it's not about protecting your data specifically. But it is a little bit trickier to buy non-KYC Bitcoin than just signing up to Coinbase and buying something, right? But why not put the time in? Why not go and figure out how to use BISC or RoboSats? Like, well, first of all, you'll learn something and you'll feel great about yourself because you'll feel like, oh, I'm a bit of a gangster. I can buy non-KYC Bitcoin, send it straight to cold storage. Like no one's, that's cool. So it's not like you shouldn't sit there and see it as like, oh my God, no, I've got to learn something else. And oh, it's another complication. No, it's another opportunity to become even more sovereign, to become even more badass. So look, KYC stands for kill your customer. If you don't want to get killed, stop giving people pictures of your passport. I made that mistake and I really wish I hadn't.
Well said. Well, this episode was not designed to be an ad spot for the Bitcoin way, but it certainly turned out to be one. So for everyone listening, thank you for tuning in. If you need help with online privacy, this is just to their points, so important. If you want to take full self-custody of your Bitcoin, you don't want to end us to end up talking about you on a Bitcoin banter because you've lost your coins or you can't access your account. We also help with privacy phones, which your mobile life is everything nowadays, and Plan B residencies. If you want to get out of the country that is trying to censor you or stop you from living your self-sovereign life, go to thebitcoinway.com/podcast. We would love to schedule some time with you, chat, explain our services. Again, thebitcoinway.com/podcast. Gentlemen, thank you as always. Look forward to reconnecting with you early next week.
Thank you, Michael. Always a pleasure, man.
Cheers, Michael.
Cheers, guys.